Two Pints in a Corner is a music history podcast about the Channel Club in Boston, Mass. Dinky Dawson and Tony Rain are your hosts. They interview channel performers and workers, bringing out stories and memories of the great music and events that came through this iconic South Boston venue. Welcome to Two Pints in a Corner. Mark, Steve and Chris from a wonderful group that we used to have at the channel that used to eat my daughter's deli tray called Slapshot. And Sean McNally is doing a wonderful job for me and with me for Tony. This usually it's Tony Rain and myself, but Tony is not too well. We just actually went to the Cape this morning to see him, and he's better than I thought he would be, but he's still not functioning the way from he's got the same as Chris Doherty, you know, the massive stroke thing and what have you. But he's cheerful. His mind is sharp. His body's still working on it, trying to get it together. But at the end of the day, he misses everybody. He says, "Oh, man, you got them guys tonight?" I says, "Yeah, Sean's done a great job, as usual. Gets everybody." So he did.
All the best to Tony.
Definitely. You guys had some fun with Tony. I know that because he remembered it. He had a big smile on his face this morning when we mentioned we're doing you today, guys.
That's great.
Well, listen, I'm going to get off yatting because I'm going to let Sean take over for the channel because he's been doing such a wonderful job and he keeps still doing it. He's still out there doing it, doing the stuff on many levels, and I love it. I think it's awesome.
It's just a different
thing. So, Sean, it's all yours, kiddo. Go for it.
Thank you, Dinky. You're too kind, and I'm really happy about this episode. I think we're trying to get represent the Boston hardcore scene for sure on these episodes because it was such an important part. And obviously, you know, I'm kind of biased. That was really my, you know, favorite part of the whole thing as well. So I'm really happy to have at least an early representation of Slapshot. Most people know that Slapshot's been around since 85, which is kind of crazy to believe that. It'd be 41 years as an ongoing entity, so to speak. And they are actually wrapping up their career, supposedly, this year with three final shows. Wow. We're going to try and focus mostly on the early part of the time frame when I was really, you know, close to these guys, did a lot of shows together, and even lived together for a while with a lot of fun back in those days. So we're going to kind of focus on that. Therefore, I have two of the original guys, which is going to be Steve Ristein and Mark McKay, who are two of the founders of the band, and then Chris Lowry, who came on board a little bit later as the third bass, but I think he's been with the band probably the longest over the long time, to tell you the truth. But just before we get ahead of ourselves here, the initial Slapshot was Choke, of course, on vocals, Steve and Mark, as I just mentioned, and then Jonathan Anastas, who went on to be in DYS and other bands. He's on the West Coast now. So there have been many revolving figures, so to speak, in the Slapshot universe, but the very early part of it is kind of what I want to focus on today. And in fact, Steve, you were the one that named the band, correct?
Yeah, well, actually, I mean, I think Choke said the name, and I put it on the back of a sweatshirt and was like, yep, that's the name.
I like it.
Awesome. And you basically were the guitar player for the first 6, 7, 8 years or so. And then, Mark, you again were the original drummer for the same time period, and you came back a couple of times after that to help out when you could. Yeah. And then I know, Chris, you came on board like around close to 93 and for maybe like 10 or 12 years together there, and then again later on in the piece here. But let's just focus on the early parts of this. I know, and of course, Chris, you also played in several other bands, including some that played at the channel, like Deathlock, even a little bit after Slapshot, but you were in the scene as well for quite a while there. And then you've all had different bands you've been in over the years. And we'll talk about that a little bit. But Slapshot, and again, I came to Boston to go to school in 84, and I didn't really get in the music scene till the next year. But, you know, Slapshot was kind of like, to me at least, the pinnacle of the Boston hardcore scene, even though they really turned out they were just kind of starting at that point. But they were like the name that everybody kind of knew about. I mean, there was like kind of this aura about the band, and I'm sure they've all talked about it, where, well, this band is vicious, and they, you know, the singer Choke's got a hockey stick on stage. He's whacking people, and they're all straight edge. And if they see somebody with a drink, they're going to take that drink out of your hand. And I mean, there's all these like crazy rumors, which are pretty, obviously great publicity for the band, number one. But, you know, come to find out, you know, these guys are like some of the sweetest guys I've known. And I've known these guys for 40 something years. just kind of, I mean, it's kind of funny. Like the Sam Black Church guy's the same thing. Insane on stage, but in person, so chill and so cool and just like down to earth. It's like a weird thing, but not the other way, it's too far. But so Slapshot, 1985 was the beginning of that. And you guys came, a couple of you guys came from a different band to start off. So maybe Steve or Mark, tell me what the band you guys were in, and Chris actually was in the band as well. Who was in the first band that went into Slapshot?
Actually, Chris and I were both in Terminally Ill. Mark was our pseudo manager, just always with us. We wanted him as the drummer.
He didn't quite know drums yet.
Yeah, no, nothing. You know. No.
Yeah.
Where was Terminally Ill playing around? Were you guys playing around town? You guys, it was like a Malvern band. You guys were off in the Malvern area, yes?
We only played three shows.
Three shows, four shows, or something like that. We played at the Living Room.
Wow.
Where else? We played at Brandeis. Remember
that one? Oh, that's right.
And then we played in someone's living room. Not the building.
But the Malvern show.
But by January 15th, January 15th, 1987, Bad Brains and an 18-plus and Jerry's Kids and then Slapshot. That's the first time I saw you at the channel. And then
that was the first channel show. And so basically, that's how I want to get to that point next. You guys started as Terminally Ill, short-lived, and then you kind of crossed Choke, another guy from the area, and that you got the formation of Slapshot kind of came together there. And I know your first show you guys said was in December of 85 at Luco's, correct? Yeah. And that was opening for Circle Jerk. That's a great gig to get on to open your first show. How did that happen? How did that come together so quickly?
That's how it was, though. Not that I played that show or anything, but that's how it was back in the day. It was like open for the Circle Jerks wasn't a big deal. I mean, it's a big deal, obviously, but it's not like what you think it is 40 years later.
Right. Good point.
You know?
Yeah, I think we with the Circle Jerks, probably the most out of any other band.
You know, landmarks.
But you did Suicidal Tendencies, you opened for them at a 2 p.m. show, just you guys. And then he started headlining in 88 in July.
Sean sent a list around of how many times we played the channel just today, and I couldn't believe how many times we played there.
So what was the first headlining show for you guys?
July 30th.
That was July 31st of 88. Slapshot, The Hard Ones, and The Loved Ones. That's what I have written in the system. In the
The Hard On show.
Yeah, The Hard On.
That was it. Yeah.
So that was actually my first time seeing Slapshot live.
Oh wow!
I went to high school. Kind of grew up with Mark and Steve, so it was my opportunity to see their band.
Wow!
It was unbelievable. Like I couldn't even fathom. Like and honestly, you know, with all due respect, I thought it was going to be awful because I didn't like Choke, but I didn't particularly like them. And it's like these guys are unbelievable. Like this is great how good they are.
Yeah.
Wow.
So
right, it's like a machine out of the box. I mean, it was just like all of a sudden, just like clicked. Before you guys like King of the Mountain in Boston.
So quick anecdote.
And same with the fans. They were quick down here in Plymouth. The alternative school kids that Nancy used to teach, that's all they'd talk about is this group called Slapshot. And then I go and take a deli in tray one day and it's for Slapshot. I said, hey, they've risen to the occasion here in the channel. They're a number one band. And the kids are coming all the way up from Plymouth because you're at the early shows, 1 o'clock, 3 o'clock, 2 o'clock, you know, and that was the key. That was the key to really get notoriety at the club is those early shows. Because so everyone that came there came to see you guys. And once in a while they'll come to see somebody else on the bill, but mainly they came to see you guys.
The matinees were kind of like, every Sunday was like, we all talked about this before. It's like kind of just, everybody was playing. We all just kind of showed up there, right? It was just kind of a scene. Mm-hmm. And then, so Chris, you had an angle that you want to mention about that show?
So just a quick anecdote of so, you know, I've known, you know, Steve and Mark, we went to high schools together. We Malden dudes. And I remember, like, they had started this band, obviously Slapshot. And I remember Steve and Mark coming over. Steve was in his Camaro.
Slapshot. I like it.
They had back. We went for a ride around the neighborhood in Malden, listening to that. Like, and you know, again, full disclosure, I was like, I don't really like it. It's okay. But again, mm-hmm. My experience with Choke was like, I don't like this guy. I'm not too sure why you guys, you know, hitched your wagon to him. But right. Anyway, so they go on, they're relatively successful. And then Step On It came out. And I actually bought the cassette. I went out the Newbury Comics and I purchased the cassette. I put it on and I was completely blown away. I'm like, this is an entirely different band.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
I'm not too sure what formula. I'm guessing it's Jordan Wood.
Yeah.
Holy shit. What is going on here? And after that, I was like, I'm on to this. And then that was where that Hard On show comes in, where I was like, I gotta see what my dudes are doing. Because sure, this is crazy. This is absolutely insane what they're doing.
And that's awesome.
I was just hooked. I was like, this is one of the best bands I've ever heard. I can't believe these guys. And again, no offense, talentless.
Absolutely.
Yeah. You know? And like, holy shit, like it locked into me. I still hear, if I hear Step On It, I'm like, go full on.
Oh, yeah.
I love it.
What is 40 years? Are we at 40 years?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? What's gonna happen when I'm in like a retirement home? You know?
They call the cops. I gotta tell you,
Chris, you know, like presenting a band at a club like the Channel, you know, with the incredible sound system like you could see the band from everywhere. It's just such a powerful thing, you know. You pack the place out, it sounds amazing, great lights, everything, and it's professionally run. I mean, it was just, you know, all it had everything going for it.
It totally, the Channel, and I'm not saying this because obviously we're on this podcast, but the Channel, like shows there were particular shows there that literally changed my life.
Yep.
How I perceived what success was.
Mm.
Yeah.
And one of those, so what was the capacity at the Channel?
It's like 1,700, give or take, but we certainly went over that a few times.
Yeah. I remember seeing, and Mark, you were probably there, but I didn't see you. It was the Ramones in, like, I'm going to say, like, 86-ish.
Mm-hmm.
It was, you know, like the real band, like Mark, DD, you know.
They played quite a bit, which is great. Like, once or twice a year, it was awesome.
I remember the show was going to happen. Like, the show was happening. I didn't have a ticket. I was by myself. I said, you know what? I'm just going to drive down to South Boston. I'm going to see what I can do. I walked up and they're like, yeah, you can go in. So you remember how there was like the antway? Like there was like you walked in the first door and there was the ticket booth, but then you had to look for another door.
Yeah.
So give you a ticket. Like, yeah.
Can I get a ticket? Yeah, sure. Whatever. $9. I don't even know. Yeah. That, which is insane. That's a whole nother. We could have a whole nother podcast. walking through the second door where like that area there was like the drop area was the kind of loungish area was, I remember walking through that second door and not moving. I'm like, this is the craziest thing I've ever seen.
Yeah.
And they were just like the intro music was happening.
Yeah.
And then into Lobotomy. And I'm by myself. Steve's an expert at navigating. I navigated my way up to like one of the wings, and absolutely blown away. It's not necessarily the Ramones themselves. Of course it is, but it was that the energy club, you know, it was just, it was perfect. It was perfect. And that you kind of grow up and you're like, oh, I want to be, you know, I want to play Foxborough, whatever, whatever. The Garden, that totally changed. And I was like, no, this is what I'm looking for. This is to be in a club, and it's just packed, and every single person there is 110% into it.
Yes, absolutely.
And not to get too far ahead, I do want to talk about you guys. So you guys formed '85, then a year later you released the first record, Back on the Map, on the local label Tang. I gave too much props to Tang, but they did get your first record out there, which is a good thing. So that was out, and then like Chris said, Step One, it came out, and it just kind of seemed like you guys are at a different level, like so quickly, and it was like clearly you guys were the king of the mountain in Boston for kind of keeping the Boston hardcore scene back and really making a statement. Which again, to me, Back on the Map was right here to bring it back. It was, these are kind of, after SSD kind of shut it down, was like, you know, things are kind of shifting metal, you know, and it was just a different scene altogether. And then you guys were like, oh, we're bringing this shit right back to where it should be. And from that point on, I was like, okay, they're the main dog in this fight, and everybody's kind of followed your lead for years after that.
It's a valid point, Sean, from someone like in the scene at the time and being influenced by that. And I think maybe Steve and Mark can probably back this up, is that like I was actually in, again, no disrespect to John and those guys, but like when Dave Smalley put that video out about like they didn't want to be hardcore, they wanted to be a rock and roll band, that was very, very disappointing. I don't know if anyone remembers that video, but like they wanted to be like AC/DC or something like that.
It was a weird time, right? It was a weird time. Like there was this whole
it was a weird time.
Yeah, like this transition was going on, and even like the crossover wasn't like another couple of years after that, really. Like, you know, when, you know, the Exodus, and then, you know, the Cro-Mags to a degree, and then Leeway, of course. Like some of these bands just became, you know, like they tied that, they married that metal thing so well. They're such good players, and it was just like, okay, this is kind of Slayer and Motor, you know, Slayer and Metallica was like, wow, what's going on? You know, just one extreme to the other, right? So,
yeah.
But all those bands could get along, you know, famously to a degree, as there was, you know, there was obviously mixed, you know, whether the long haired kids and the skinheads and, the original, it was pretty rough there at times. It could be kind of rough in the pit where there, you know, there was no love for the other side, so to speak. But over time, it did really merge to a great degree where you had, you know, bands like Leeway with, you know, these long haired guys playing guitar. And you guys are all long haired guys playing guitar. And, you know, it's just like, I guess it's okay to be that way. You know, it was kind of an observation or like an eye opening thing to see you guys up on stage, like, you know, choking the phone with the skin there with the slamming his fucking hockey stick everywhere and busting his head open. And yeah, you guys are just raging in the background. It was just like such a cool thing to see that, you know, the dichotomy that we could both be both the same. You know what I mean? Not that you guys really a metal band per se at that point, but it was like, but you guys could still play hardcore. It was such a cool thing to see, you know?
I think people wanted that aggressive music still, like, you know, when the bands in Boston were slowing it down to, you know, AC/DC speed, which isn't necessarily slow, but it's slow compared to what we were doing.
Like,
but people still wanted it fast and aggressive. So, you know, so we, you know, the bands were kind of dropping like flies in Boston. They were either just breaking up and disappearing, or they were playing kind of slower rock music that, you know, that the kids in the hardcore scene just didn't want to listen to. So we kind of slid right into the right in the middle there. We just got lucky. And Choke was infamous at that point already, like when we started. He had already been through two bands that, you know, played a minimum of shows, but maximum effect. So
yeah, notoriety for sure.
Ready. Yeah.
It's a negative effect.
Yep.
Absolutely. Mm. So then, you know, this is the time we're talking about. So Back on the Map, '86, Step On It. And this is where you guys started getting the shows, like the really prime shows. Like Dinky said, the first time we found you at the channel was January 87, Bad Brains, Jerry's Kids and Slap Shots. Like what a bill.
Like a dream show to me still to this day.
Yeah, exactly, right?
18 plus 100%. As well, 18 plus.
Yeah.
That was...
Right, and then after that, the recital came in like...
$5.
Yeah, $8 or $10, yeah. Yeah.
Not much.
Like a few months later, Suicidal came in headline. You guys were the other band with that bill at 2 o'clock All Ages show, I think it was, which again helped
kind of create that unity, you know, with the all underages, underage kids or the all ages scene, where people would come from all over the area to take the train in the Southeast, so they could, or South Boston, get to the train station and walk over the bridge to the channel, because you could meet all your friends there. You see the bands you love. You could go off, just go crazy for a few hours, get all that angst out of your body, and then. It was so great. It was such a great, you know, at the time we were all so much younger, but it was such a great time to be alive, honestly, to see those shows and how cool it was, you know?
I remember the channel was a real destination, not just for the music, but for the parking lot scene beforehand, like earlier, you know? You know, just like hang out in the parking lot for hours and swap fanzines and see your friends and then see a great show, you know?
Right. Yeah. Listen to cassette and each other's fanzines and whatnot. Yeah, absolutely. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. So then your first headlining show, like Dinky mentioned, July 31st of 88, Slapshot Hard-Ons and on the Loved Ones. That was the 1 o'clock all ages show. The next one was the infamous Sham 69 show, which is October 88. Sham 69, Slapshot and Grin. Now, those of us remember, Sham never showed up that day for whatever reason. It was an all ages 1 o'clock show. So we're trying to remember this earlier. You guys played. I think you played 2 sets that day. You guys remember the same thing or no?
That's what I remember as well. That we played, you know, either 2 sets or much longer or more than we had intended to, just to kind of fill that time.
Right.
Do we know what happened with Sham 69?
I still don't know. No, I don't. I don't know if the country is going to play Boston. Back then, it was like all the English bands would come across. But they had to start the tour in Boston or New York. And a couple of times where this did happen, we had cancellations, but they couldn't get the visas, or they just couldn't.
Visas or something,
don't recall if I ever found out what happened to Sham. I have to assume it was something like that, because I don't think they played anywhere else in the country that year on that trip.
But it was mainly reggae acts that were always in there early, because it was the first gig after they were getting the country, or the last gig before they left. But on hardcore and everything... the English guys were still having trouble getting permits to play and stuff like that. I think you guys did an extra long set that particular day, because I remember it was really just the two and Grin. That was it.
There was a lot of people there for sure. I know that, because Sham was very, very popular.
And then
we're going to do Back on the Map for the third time.
Back on the Map again.
And then 89, you did Brad Grains, Leeway, Slapshots, Jerry Kids. That was a big show too.
Wow. That
was a big, big show and stuff. But then you started headlining for 3 shows in a row. You know, 1990, 30th of September, and it was a 3 o'clock show, and the memory are the Buzz Tones and Mike Foster or whatever. But Sam Black Perch.
That was one of the first shows with Slapshot.
We're gonna spend some time on this one. So this is this show, and this is just for anybody out there. So I was at the time I was working the channel for like a few years, security, whatever, and bringing a few bands in. But this was when I started doing shows together, booking shows. And this was actually the first show that John Regan, I'm sure you guys remember John Regan from Top Secret Promotions. Okay. He was doing shows at the Rat and Bun Rags, and I was as well. And we kind of decided to merge our forces together, because he knew I worked at the channel. And he's like, oh, my God, your show's in the channel now? So this was the first show, actually, that John and I did together. It was a Cringe/Top Secret production. Mm. And it was unbelievable. It was Slapshot, record release party for Sudden Death Overdrive. The Boss Tones for Devil's Night Out, Maelstrom Step One. All three had new records out, brand new records on Tang.
Yeah.
So it was this showcase, and I ended up speaking on, you know, Sam Black Church on the opening act. They weren't even on the flyer, because I was managing them. I just started managing those guys to help me get some gigs, and of course, to get them on this bill was a no brainer to me. Get them in front of so many people, and. It was a 3 o'clock all ages show, and we had like 800 kids showed up. And I just remember saying how it was almost like, I think even the band were like, holy shit, what's going on? Like, these are like four local bands. It was like, and it was like a packed, you know, people going crazy. And it was like, damn, it's like, what have we got going on here? It was such an amazing show for so many reasons.
That was unbelievable.
We had to do it again on November 11th, because it was another one of those days at 3 o'clock in the afternoon, all ages at noon. Slapshot, Wargasm, Wrecking Crew, Malaya Rage, and DJ Mod Todd. It was this one thing.
And I love how you guys are merging the metal thing even more with that show specifically. But let's talk about that first 9:30 show. That was your real first time. I mean, you guys did him on a couple of years earlier with the Hard On show, but this to me was
really
slap shots coming out party. And not even just, but the Boss Tones as well, even Maelstrom and the SBC, because it was like, I don't know, just like everybody seemed to be there for the right reasons. It was just an incredible turnout. People were going crazy. All had new records. That was such an exciting time. You guys were going to go on tour at that point for the national tour. So give me some memories of that, either the show directly, that show exactly, or leading up to it, or memories from the show. I'd like you guys to all listen a couple minutes on this, if you don't mind.
Yeah.
I think Chris probably has some good ones about that one.
Yeah, that was one of my first shows with Slapshot. Not my first show, but that's a different podcast that we'll have. Like, holy crap, because I mean, Sean, how many people were there? I mean, we were probably
800.
Yeah, so we were at 80% of the channel, which is beyond. Now keep in mind, in 86, 87, even 88, I was in a band that was doing Tuesday night,
yep,
where you had to sell the tickets.
Yeah.
Oh yeah.
Like you, the block. Dinky, do you remember the printing out the block?
Oh yeah.
Of the tickets. you had to either like give them out or sell them. I was in a thrash band. But
and you got it.
Yeah. Death Rock was a good band. They played a bunch of shows there. Yeah. Death Rock was a good band. And you guys had those dollar off coupons that your friends gave out to your friends if they came in with that ticket. You guys get credit for something like that.
And then they got a dollar back for each ticket.
That's what it was.
That was something. That was those shows, Sean. That those early shows and the POW show.
Oh yeah.
Shortly after that, right?
Yeah.
Yes. Yep. November. Yep. Years after that.
And having all the merch money.
Yeah. You guys were merch. Let's not forget that merch point. You guys were like the merch kings back then.
The shirts are everywhere.
Clear shirts. You guys were awesome merchandising.
Yeah, Steve is a marketing genius.
Wow. I mean, great logos, great name. Everything was just, you guys really nailed the merch stuff. No question about it.
Yeah, no, that's all Steve. Steve takes all that. Yeah, that's marketing the band was Steve.
Now, I'll just give you a quick aside. Like for Sam Black Church, we stole the whole Boston idea from you guys. You guys are Slapshot Boston. Like, okay, Sam Black Church, Boston. And that's, we did it forever. And it was really successful. You know, we became big merch sellers as well after that. But I mean, Mark, how about you, buddy? You're the guy behind the drum kit. You're the guy looking at it all right in front. You must have been an amazing sight. So give me some thoughts on that show, if you don't mind.
Oh, gosh. I mean, you know, these were shows that I just can't even believe I had the opportunity to play. Like, you know, so grateful playing with bands that I loved and playing for my friends, you know. And right, when you're at the channel, like, you can see, you know, the first, you know, group of people that are up front there, and you can see your friends' faces and things like that. The channel stage was just incredible. It was so great to play. The sound was impeccable, you know, so I just can't even believe the amount of times we played there, Sean. That list really just blew my mind. I had been there so many times. Like when I was in high school, I was going to these like new band matinee shows on Sundays just to check out, you know, some local bands. You know, these are the first club that I went to when I was in high school, was checking out bands at the channel. So, you know, so to graduate and really like be playing on that stage, but also the camaraderie that you felt. I mean, you felt like, you know, even though you're up on that stage doing it, you're doing it with your friends and for your friends, but mostly with your friends, you know.
Yeah.
Right. That'd be a totally crazy, like surreal, like you just said. We'll talk about this later on in the call, but you guys all attended a bunch of shows there before you played there. So they actually come full circle. Now here you are, the headlining act on stage, and it's like, it just was such a cool experience they got to go through. You know what I mean? That's amazing.
Oh, truly.
And
yes.
How about you, buddy?
That show was just, like I told you earlier today, man, it was like definitely one of my top three shows. I mean, the Boss Tones, Maelstrom, Sam Black playing with us too. I mean, it's, you couldn't have asked for anything better. Well, I could. My whole family was there.
Your dad was MC. Yeah, that was so great. Your dad introduced you guys on stage.
Awesome. We almost needed to get the hook for him because he wouldn't leave the stage.
I know. We had a monologue.
We're like, yeah, just go out and say the name. And he went out and said the name, and then he's like standing there practically in tears, like, oh my God, that's my son.
Proud papa, man, for sure.
Yep.
You know,
yep.
Who could blame him? Yeah. Now, I'll give you the one more funniest side about that show. So, you know, the show was obviously other bands had new records on Tang. So Curtis was, you know, when Curtis was there that day to sell merchandise, he was saying, I didn't know you added a fourth band, Sam Black. I said, well, yeah, you know, I'm managing now. I want to get him in front of some people. He's like, oh, I would put another Tang. I would put the Titanics on. I'm like, no, that wouldn't have worked.
Right.
You know, I think it's Titanics. It would have made no sense at all on that show. So I'm just like, nah. Right. I'll stick with the band we picked for this one. That worked out to be an incredible show.
Yeah. Maelstrom, which were 10 years, literally 10 years ahead of their time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So good. So good.
Yeah.
No doubt about it.
And that sucks for them because they could have been huge, but.
Yeah. They had the mental thing nailed. They were really, and anybody who doesn't know the name Maelstrom, you know, try and go back and listen to like the WRS tapes and the demos. It's so incredible stuff. And some stuff on step one is fine, but there's so much stuff before that. Just incredibly tight, incredible musicians. And
Zach is brilliant.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah. And Zach was one of your roadies for a while there, the Slapshot Gang, yes?
He actually was in the studio, too, with us when we were doing Sudden Death Overtime. He was in the studio.
It's awesome. And again, this whole Boston scene family, now Zach plays guitar in Sam Black Church, which is just kind of a cool... Mm-hmm. Full circle moment. And he, you know, and not to forget this too, I want to mention we try to get Hank on the call. Hank, everybody knows who Hank is. Hank was like the official roadie for Slapshot and, you know, Straw Dogs, all the bands in that era from the Boston scene. But he's known around the world, and I would love to have his stories on here as well. He's such a character, and he's still around and still like best buds all these guys. So shout out to Hank. And again, I would like that joke on at some point, and John, but we just figured I'll get the guys who I know locally, and we'll have a lot of fun to talk about. Just you guys together, a lot of memories to talk about for sure. We could have other calls on the road if we have to. That'd be great. But just want to make sure you get your guys' input on all this stuff. It was a really important time in Boston music.
You guys just played towards the end of the club in 91 in September 29th. It was an all-ages show that you were headlining. But that was with Lee Way and Sam Black Church. But but after that, December 15th, which is the last show that you guys did there, was Bad Brains, Slapshot. And I believe Sam Black Church was on that one too.
If I'm not mistaken, the Bad Brains were 8 hours late.
Oh,
different show, Chris.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, there's so many Bad Brains stories. Oh my God! We all worship at the speed of the Bad Brains. And, you know, maybe not so much the later years then, but early, man, holy crap! There was nobody that anybody wanted to play with more than the Bad Brains. Like Sam Black, Jerry Slapshot, they were like idols to all of us, and just so legendary and so incredible. And such good dudes, also. Same kind of deal. Such good guys.
Just fun guys.
Steve, they were so cool. Steve, tell us a story. You mentioned a quick story about
earlier.
Brains kind of shouting you out or saying hi to you.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it was, of course, being such a huge Bad Brains fan was, you know, we played with them a bunch of times already, and I was just walking by. I didn't think anything of it. I was just walking by HR and was like, hey, have a great set, and just kept walking because, you know, I didn't expect anything. And then I hear HR say, thanks, Steve. And like that floored me. I mean, that was like one of my like top moments in life. Was just like, I idolized this band, and he knows my name.
That's cool. That's a great little story. I like that one.
Again, it's like when you meet your idols, they say that never meet your idols, be disappointed. But I have not seen that, especially in this community, the hardcore scene. I don't really. Yeah, there's going to be some jackasses out there and hard, you know, assholes once in a while. But for the most part, I love meeting almost everybody in the scene because most of the guys are really, really good people, good dudes. It's just like, and they're normal guys, like regular guys like all of you guys. It's just like, they're cool, you know? And it's like, and even if you have them on a pedestal, like Steve said, I mean, the Bad Brains, again, to me, anybody, they're like my number one all-time, like most insane band I've ever seen. You know, they were cool guys too as well, which is just makes it that much more fun, I guess, or more cool, right?
They were good with us, with the sound and everything and nights. So they were really entertaining in that level with their crew. And they knew what they wanted. They knew exactly what they wanted. And they got it. And not only that, they performed really, really well to everyone when they were all up there.
When they were on, they were just so tight, just so...
Yeah, exactly.
So, I mean, I think I saw them with...
That's the word, tight.
Yeah, three different lead singers or four different lead singers over time, but, I mean, the early Bad Brains, holy crap. I mean, but even later on, they were just such a good band and so good. And, again, they're like one of those iconic bands you just had to go see at least once if you heard their name, you know?
I think them were the guys that pulled down the no stage diving signs.
I have many memories of that when I'm, you know, these all ages shows with Brooklyn there and Dickie saying, "Sure, get them off my monitors." All you guys are doing headstands, head flips off the monitors on the stage. I'm like, you know, what do you do, Dickie? I do so much. These guys are having a good time and no one's trying to hurt anybody. It's just, you know, this is what they do. It's like, what the hell's going on? They're not fighting. They're just having fun. They're getting some angst, getting the angst out. And, oh, man, there was no better stage to play. Like you say, to show or to jump off of or just
perfect.
It was so big and the sound system. Oh, my God. It's just like you're playing in the best place you could imagine.
In the wind. You
know? Especially when the place was
full. It just felt like, okay, be like a rock star in your hometown playing the channel. It felt so incredible.
Yeah.
I went to Steve on several occasions going from the stage to dancing on heads. It was unbelievable, like how he could get from point A to point B on people's heads.
Well, that was the fun part.
It's a learned skill, right, Steve? It's a learned skill over the years.
Yes.
It really is.
Yeah, because
and the channel stage was so high too, right? I mean, the channel stage was like
it was up there.
So
it was
high.
We've heard of
people, at least 5 feet, I think. Did you right? 5 foot stage.
Yeah. We've heard of artists jumping off the stage in the cloud, parting like the Sea of Galilee, but the people.
Oh, that happened to me, Dinky.
Oh, exactly.
Yeah, I was going to say we're going to separate from the actual performances of the show. When you guys played, I want to also go now to talk about your memories of attending shows. Dan. And that's a good segue, Dinky, to what Mark wants to say about one of the shows he attended. Why don't you go ahead, Mark? What about that Black Flag show?
Oh, geez. Yeah. It's one of my least favorite memories, but it was, you know, it's such a huge Black Flag fan, and it was, I think it was the first time I was seeing them, and I was right up front, and people were just going off, and the band was just incredible, so I was just moved to, like, get up on stage and do a dive, and I went right to the back of the drum platform, made a good run, did a flip, and I landed Mac on my head. I was knocked unconscious. So,
oh no!
Unbelievable.
Yeah, no fun. But I recovered in the bathroom for a few minutes and came back out swinging. So,
That was always the panic of the club if someone gets hurt, because we did, you know, the club as a, you know, I was on both sides of the fence, right? I was a worker at the club. I also was a, you know, promoter and bringing, and I was managing bands. So it's like, you know, we want the kids to have all the freedom they want, and if they want to jump, let them jump, but. That's always the biggest fear. Someone actually gets really hurt, and it's like, you know, through no one's fault. It just shit happens sometimes. But at the same time, it's like organized chaos usually, right? And it's surprising no one did catch you, Mark, because for the most part, it was very helpful to get you off the floor if something happened to you or make sure you didn't hit the floor, right?
Yeah. Well, somebody must have done something, because I woke up in the bathroom, you know, sitting against the wall of the bathroom. So somebody must have helped me or something. But yeah, they didn't catch me. So,
wow.
Yeah, and that's the thing though. Like, even if that happened, people were still, there was still some concern.
Oh yeah,
absolutely.
Always, they were always like, hey, let's get this, let's help this dude.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Yeah. Like, that's the thing. That was the beauty of it. I bring this up, and there's always like this weird confrontation, but like, in the time of the, the matinee shows, which was, I don't know, 83 to what, 87, I don't know. I don't even know.
90. Yeah, it's a 90 show.
There weren't fights.
Yeah.
No one fought. It was like, oh, okay, I landed on your head. I got you, man. You know, you're good. You're fine.
That sort of thing.
And that's why I think that changed the dynamic of the scene.
Mm-hmm. It did.
That changed.
The thing that was also interesting is that there was lawyers and accountants and, you know, business people would come into the place they get changed in the bathroom and put their little pads on their on their elbows and on their legs and go stage diving and go slam down and in the pool. Once you got you guys going, they'll be spinning around doing the whole. I'm going like, boy, that's a lawyer over there. And I says, look at him, he's having a great old time. They just got the steam out. And I'm saying, well, that's a fresh one for me. The guys from New York coming up with the skinheads to try and get into their gang kind of thing. And we watched all that scene go down. But the best one was when they used to come in with the bathroom and get changed and say, can we leave our clothes here? I said, yeah, you can leave your clothes here. Nobody's going to steal them. And then they go into the mosh pit. And I'm going like, yeah, this is cool. But you've got all kinds of
fights. It's a good point, though, Chris. Like, you know, if there were ever any fights, they were squashed real quickly, right? It was nothing nervous.
I think in the early 90s, it kind of changed where it was fighting was a thing. Yeah. You know what I mean? It became a thing, and that's when I kind of tuned out.
Yeah.
But not only you, the clubs did, because clubs didn't want any part of that bullshit. And that's why there were no more shows after. When the channel closed, we try to move shows around a little bit to the Rap on Rowdy's, different spots, even like the Causeway, different like, DIY places and churches and whatnot. But when there's fights, it's dumb, right? And people didn't want to be associated with that, so they said no more shows. And there were no shows, really, for a few years there in the early 90s because just no clubs wanted to deal with it. I can't say I blame them at all. It was just some knuckleheads starting problems, and then clubs just said, we're not going to do any more shows. And it's like, if there's no more shows, guess what? There's no more shows for the bands to play.
Yeah, so exactly.
It kills the whole scene.
So we've got five more minutes, Sean.
Let's go to I do want to mention one thing, because Hank did chime in. His first show was UK Subs there, and he mentioned, this kind of to the point that Chris mentioned earlier about that Ramon show. Hank mentioned the time going to a Suicidal show there where the place was so packed, they just got left. He got picked up off his feet a few times without even trying, because the crowd was moving so much. It was so crowded there. He just his feet off the floor, and that's just the way it was in some of those times when it was completely packed in there. Steve, you mentioned obviously Bad Brains, other shows that you did see there. You had a more diverse taste, I guess. You went to other kinds of music as well. Tell us some of the shows you attended as a fan.
I forget if it was Eazy-E or Ice Cube, but it was Eazy-E. And then Big Daddy Kane in third base, Loverboy.
Oh, yeah.
Loverboy with Hank yelling at the Mike Reno that he was fat.
oh my God. So going back to that suicide.
Loverboy? Really? That's pretty funny, man.
Just a quickie, going back to that suicidal tendencies. Then they were in their bus. Do you remember they were in their bus? And what happened is Tony went out to pay them, and Tony asked for me to come into the bus, so I went and followed him in the bus. They were playing a record I'd made with Steely Dan. Steely Dan and the Suicide.
Steely Dan.
I'm like, well, you guys, you just came off there and did a great old set in your hardcore stuff. Oh, yeah, we really enjoy the Steely Dan stuff.
Awesome.
That is awesome.
But Tony started laughing. He couldn't believe it. He was laughing his ass off because he knew I'd do it.
I tell you, if Mark walked onto the Suicidal bus and they were playing Steely Dan, he would catch fire.
but you have to understand, that's what I thought would happen too. Because Suicidal Tendencies, you've got to listen to all the people around them that was, you know, the Red Hot Chili Peppers. They're all from that same area. And there were excellent bands there. You know, even Red Hot came on a weekend. For all ages and stuff. But you guys were the hardcore-ish at that time, because there was nobody really too hardcore, like you said, Bad Brains and stuff like that. But you were taking a lot of that stuff, but you were giving your energy music-wise, and that was the key to you every time, and that's why the kids down here loved it, is because that's my music.
Well, I got to Dinky, the club meant so much to us. It really did. Yeah. It was my home when I was in high school. It was, the greatest shows that I've ever played were all played at the channel. The greatest shows I've ever seen were all at the channel. So thank you for being there for us. over the years.
You're welcome. I'd retired, believe it or not, then. I'd retired from the road in that when I brought the equipment in 84. Mm-hmm. I'd done the Melody Tent, so I'd been doing it MOR. I came in to do this, and I said, boy, it reminds me of the club I used to have in the 60s. Because I had the clubs like that in England.
That's incredible.
Dinky, so I have a... So this is a memory that I have, and I'm not too sure. So obviously, I don't really know you, but I believe we met. I'm gonna say like '86 or something like that. I was in a thrash metal band, but you told a story that I still tell people of that you were. And correct me if I'm wrong. You were on the road with Fleetwood Mac.
Yeah.
And you were loading up bottle caps with blow. You don't have to admit or deny either one. That's okay.
Bottle
but
caps.
I thought that was the best thing I had ever heard from anyone ever. And I'm like, this is the greatest dude I've ever heard. It was just some
actual limitations, long gone. It's okay to talk about it.
That's long gone, but I used to get these. We had our van called Nelly Belly, and I used to turn the windshield wipers to the outside, and I pressed the pump and squirt everybody on the bridge in London Bridge going to work in the morning, you know, and stuff like that. They were all looking around where the water came from. I got a bunch of people. It was great. I used to love it. But there's so many things we did at that time, but so many things later when I quit everything and come to the channel. Because the society and the music was changing. Music kept changing. It changed in 79 when the audience decided to become the artist.
You were there along with it.
Yeah, I changed along with it because I let everybody have a good time. I says, come on, you guys, have a good time. I've already done my skin. I did my 10 years, no ifs, no buts. I says, and more than that, I said, let's go and have a good time at the channel. And I enjoyed it till 2 o'clock in the morning, remember? You could still come over there from the clubs at 12 o'clock and see the last act on there. But for you guys, it was always the first or second act because you were the hardcore early bands before it really got popular, you know, and what have you. So we much enjoyed it. We much enjoyed the change of society, the change of everything. And you could see that sometimes 3 to 4 times a week. If not more, even the local bands, you know, it was just one event after the other that you guys and people like it loved it because you could play that damn big stage and have a great old time with loud
well
stuff.
Put.
And you know, we're all glad that you're still playing. And I'm telling you, from my experience and everything, you got to play till you pass away because once you start getting lethargic and not playing, you lose all your feeling, all your momentum in life and stuff like that. But you keep at it and you'll have a great old time. So Sean,
we've actually missed a bunch of stuff. We're already up to an hour, which is hard to believe. I'm not surprised. There's so much good stuff to talk about. But I guess we could end this off with the fact of you guys have been out of Slapshot for a long time, essentially, especially Steve and Mark. And then Slapshots had their 35th anniversary a few years ago, and they did a couple of shows in the Middle East, and all of the ex-Slapshot guys, which is about at least 16 or 17 people, had this idea. I don't know if Hank came up with it, or Mark, some of you guys with the idea of the Slap Knot, and we did a Slap Knot show, which is like almost like a karaoke version of Slapshot, doing that. I didn't rip the whole reunion show. I mean, it was such a fun weekend. We raised some money for good causes, and a lot of people came in and played the role of Choke as a singer, and you guys all played Terrence backing the band. It was just such a cool time. Two things in that weekend, though. One of the best things was when, at the end of the night, Steve and Mark and Jonathan came back in and joined Choke on stage and played the last 4 songs of the set. It was just so fucking cool seeing you guys on stage together doing that. It had been so long. And what a great way to end that weekend. And then the second thing I want to mention is that Slap Knot kind of gag thing actually spawned the current band you guys are in, which is Steve and Mark, and also Jamie, who played in Slapshot back in the day, and SSD. And then Daryl Shepard, who also played in Slapshot. And then also Glenn, the singer from Wrecking Crew was in this new band, and they were a new band called The Long Wait, because it was a long wait until they got back together from playing the music together. And it's just, I'm just so happy this has happened as a kind of an outflow of the whole Slapshot thing, because a lot of drama over the years. But this has kind of been a fun ending to it with having the Long Wait guys. We're doing a bunch of shows. Maybe you guys mentioned this couple of shows coming up. Do you have a couple of this or that, Dinky?
Yeah, I just have mentioned a couple of shows, you guys. Let's do that. Got stuff pending now that you're going to be playing?
We don't have that many shows right now. We're playing a show next month at the Midway. I don't even know the exact date, but next
14th.
Month.
I think it's the 14th.
You're so good.
Yeah, so if you broadcast like in a week or so, anything a week out or more, you can definitely mention it.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's our next show is a month away.
That's
great. You really two other shows recently, too. But yeah, keep your eyes out, listening audience, for The Long Wait. They have stuff on Bandcamp. They play out, you know, maybe like once a month or so. It's maybe once every other month, but they're out there still playing. And Chris, what have you been doing with yourself the last few years? Give a little bit of update on what you're up to before we hang up.
Nothing musical. I am literally retired.
Oh.
There you go.
Well, yeah, before you retired, you started The Long Wait with us.
Yeah. That's correct.
Well, yeah.
That's
I mean, if the opportunity presented itself, maybe, but no, in general, no.
We could retire, but just play at home. Just keep playing.
Yeah,
keep playing because that's what you brought. That's the love you have. And that's a biggie. And
it's also kind of hard to top the memories you have with the band. There were a lot of great memories you guys in this band. So
I cherish those. And, you know, I mean, obviously, like, we're in a big text chain every day with everyone. Yeah. So it's great to, like...
I want to thank Mark, and I want to thank Steve. I want to thank Chris. And, of course, I really want to thank Sean McNally because he's the pioneer for all this and really is because there's nobody else did the hardcore that I knew in town, and Sean continued it through and still is doing it. And it's a great thing because it's part of that needs to be looked at and kept, especially in this town. I want to thank you all again, and Sean will thank you again. And
thank you guys for making the time. I know it's hard to find the time. We can all do this together, but I'm glad I got at least three of you guys on the phone together for this.
Yeah, that's fine.
Sure.
That's it. Yeah. So this is Two Pints in a Corner. Close it out.
All right. Thank you, everyone.
Take care, man.
Thank you, guys.
Appreciate
thank
it.
You very much.
Yeah. All right. Thanks, Dick. Thanks so much. Take care, fellas.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.